You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden. Welcome on campus to the Purple Project Podcast. On the menu, this podcast is all about the latest developments in Kansas State athletics. From football to basketball and everything else in between the college town of the Little Apple, it's the Purple Project Podcast. And now your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what's going on, everybody? Eddie Greer, your host for another Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition here in Manhattan, Kansas, April 6th, 2023. The Purple Project Podcast, all things Kansas State. Folks, man, episode 153 of this podcast, which will go out tomorrow night at some point. I'll be headed on the road back to Kansas City for a half marathon Saturday morning as my, there we go, as that's continuing to play. Intro's off. Let's get this thing popping, of course. It's been a minute since we did a weekly with my co-host Alex, and I'll bring him on in just a moment. Of course, the last weekly came out last Monday, which is featured me, episode 152 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly, getting my reactions to the men's and women's basketball team's schedule, seasons ending in the postseason, the WNIT, and of course the Elite Eight, respectively, there. So make sure you check that out as well. So I'll be doing some house cleaning throughout the podcast here. We got a jam-packed show here. So we're going to get right on into it. Of course, our special guest here, a returning special guest, the most appearances of this podcast, Keelan Valentine, will come on here in a little bit. But for right now, Alex Aiden, my co-host for the Pearl Project Podcast Weekly out there in San Diego. And of course, before I bring him on, of course, we're both, remind everyone, we're both Kansas State alums. And we're also 91.9 Wildcat 91.9 alums, the student radio station at Kansas State University. Alex, out there in San Diego, what's up?
Not much, Eddie. We were just talking before we got on the podcast about baseball and watching our respective teams, our respective cities. So it's that time, man. We, you know, we're getting into the spring and the summer because it's already April. Time is flying by, but one question, and this might be a question that we can ask Keaton when he's on too, but I saw a KSU fan, for those of you who follow him on Twitter, tweet comparison of the 2012-2013 football and basketball season compared to the 2022 and 2023 basketball season. Tweeted some of the statistics, stats, and analytics, things around that, and asked people which one they thought was more of a success and enjoyed more, 2012 and 2013, or 2022-2023, which is a really interesting thought, because you and I were there for 2012-2013, Eddie. We were students, and we just went through what happened. So I haven't even thought that deep on it, but I saw it, and I thought it was really interesting, because they were definitely different seasons. But yeah, so one to think about, maybe we can return to it later in the pod, but quickly, Eddie, you did a good job of the coverage post tournament for the men's team on your postcast. We'll get into this more when Keaton's here as well with basketball. But I just want to congratulate again the men's basketball team for a tremendous season that they had. The Elite Eight was obviously incredibly painful and really hurt, especially. With no offense at all to San Diego State. San Diego State is an amazing basketball team. I don't know if K-State would have beat them or not if they would have gotten to the Final Four. By the way, San Diego was buzzing, man. Freaking buzzing this week when they went to that championship. But the way San Diego State plays, oh, I really like K-State's chances in that game. So it really hurts that they dropped that one to a Florida Atlantic game. I felt like they should have won. But with that said, had an amazing game against Michigan State. They made an amazing run. Had an amazing game against Kentucky. Some memories that we'll remember forever. And, you know, hopefully it's just the beginning, Eddie. Hopefully it's just the beginning for them. So, congratulations to them on a great season. And, you know, again, we'll get into more of the, you know, the game, what's ahead, the raw motion there. But all I'll say, Eddie, is this. I am glad that a microphone was not put in front of my face right after that game ended. Because over that Elite 8 hump, man, it stings, Eddie. It stings, and it took a while for that sting to go away, but finally getting over that, beginning to look back on the season. So congrats on getting to the men's team for a great year.
Yes, definitely that. The men's team, of course, losing to Florida Atlantic in Elite 8. And, of course, women falling out there, WNIT out west, out there in Seattle, to the Huskies of Washington. Mm-hmm. So you can check that out if you have not already. So I'm not going to rehash that. So you could go back. If you missed it, if you're first time listening, of course, welcome aboard the Pearl Project Podcast, all things K-State. Second thing, make sure you subscribe to the Pearl Project Podcast wherever you get your podcast so you get caught up on the latest there. So, yeah, a lot of intrigue, a lot of news also coming out of there as well. We'll touch on that either tonight or down the road on another episode of the weekly edition of the Pearl Project Podcast Weekly. Switching gears while we wait on Keelan. It's going to be a little bit before he comes and chats spring ball. K-State baseball. Tonight it was supposed to be the first game of our critical three-game series with Texas, but that got moved to, and actually here, let's see, who is this? So a little interruption on the Pro Project Podcast Weekly. Let's see if we can get this right. Let's see here. Let's see if we get it right the first time. Keithen, is this you?
What's up?
What's up? How you doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Not too bad.
You got here quicker than your ETS.
I know, man. I gotta get by myself sometimes.
There you go. Hey, there you go, man. That's how you do it.
All right, K-State Nation, joining us back again for a fourth time leading the Pearl Project Podcast guest category, Keelan Valentine, former K-State running back on the pod here with us here. Right on, it's got time, actually. So just to finish up, the thought there, K-State baseball, it was supposed to start tonight with Texas, a big three-game set after K-State lost to Nebraska on Tuesday night at home. Recently, K-State baseball has been playing well in the last 2 years at Tweeten, but that magic seemed to be going away a little bit after a series loss to West Virginia, who was ranked 24th in the country, Alex, and then you lose to your former Big 12 rival, Nebraska, Tuesday night at home again. So the series with Texas gets moved to tomorrow through Sunday. So to update you guys on that, this podcast episode will go out on tomorrow night at some point. So the Friday, 6:30 Central Time, then game two of the series between Texas and K-State. Remember, this series is in Austin, not Manhattan. Game two, 2:30 Central Time, in a series finale Sunday at 1 down there in Austin. Alex, what's your thought? It's been a while since we've last talked on the pod. What are your thoughts so far? K-State baseball has now lost 4 of the last 6 games and entering a critical stretch here with Texas coming up.
Yeah, you know, Eddie, I think that I still go back to that Baylor series and think, what a missed opportunity. I know that they swept Oklahoma, and I know that they were able to get one against Air Force on the road. But that Baylor series, man, it just, that really hurts, dropping 2-3 to them to begin a year, especially after you won 8-1 in game one, and then you blow a couple games there, games two and game three. You know, you mentioned they had a really nice sweep against Oklahoma. West Virginia's a good team. They're a good team. So, you know, losing 2-3 to them at home, you don't ever want to lose a series at home. But, you know, I didn't fret too much about that, to be 100% honest, Eddie. You know, sitting at, what are they sitting at right now? 500 in conference play.
They're actually over 500.
So they're 5-4.
Yeah, so they're 19-12 overall and 5-4 going into this weekend.
Yeah, so they're 5-4 going into this weekend at conference play. 19-12 overall, you mentioned it. And, you know, how am I feeling about it, Eddie? No, I mean, I'm feeling okay. Not great. Not horrible. Like, they are doing, they're doing about what I expected again. And we've talked about this in the past, on past episodes. But this is about what I expected going into the year for them. And with the Texas series coming up, I'm really not even that worried about how they do. down at Austin. I'm more concerned about what they do post Texas. If you look at their schedule, they've got Creighton at home, which is a winnable game. They go on the road against KU for three, which is the equivalent of going on the road to Baylor. So you sure as heck cannot do that again against KU. Come home with Wichita State for a game. Well, they go on the road against UC Irvine for three, and then you play UC Riverside for one. Because after that, the schedule really starts to ramp up, because you've got three against Texas Tech, who's ranked. You're going to have three against Oklahoma State, who's ranked. You're going to have TCU sprinkled in there. So you're going to end it, and we've talked about this, you end the schedule so difficult. You do have Southeast Missouri State sprinkled in there. But that's going to be really tough. So, Kate, while the Texas series would be great to get a series win, I don't expect it. I would be happy if they could just get a game down in Austin, to be honest, and then come back home and beat Creighton and then go to KU and win two or three and then come back home and beat Wichita State and then go to California and see if they can maybe split in those four games. Like, that, I think, is really the more important stretch for them. And if they go to Texas and they win two or three, great, awesome. That's bonus. That's gravy. But I'm just not too worried about that series. I just don't want to see them have a letdown post Texas, because if they do, that's when I think things could spiral out of control. Once the Big 12, really the Big 12 schedule catches up to them, because they'll start number ready. They played a little bit easier Big 12 schedule to open up play. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But at the end of the day, the pitching, it just has not been good enough. You know, giving up 6 runs against Nebraska, 10 runs in your last game against West Virginia. They did win 7-1 in the middle game against West Virginia, but their starting pitcher had an ERA going into that game of like 6 or something. It was quite high. So they had not had past success. And then before that, you go up 8 against West Virginia. You go up 18 against Air Force, 9 against Air Force, 7 against Oklahoma, 6 against Oklahoma. So they have struggled pitching, and they got to be better. They got to be better. You can have a good offense, and they do when they're on, but their offense can go cold. We've seen their offense go cold from time to time. Don't look no further than their loss to 1-13 St. Thomas, where they lost 2-1. So their offense can go cold. It can happen. So they need to be more consistent. But 19-12, Eddie, 5-4 conference play, I'll take that. You know what I mean? I'll take that, and we'll see. But there's a lot of baseball to play.
Kansas State is 5th in the conference right now. Let's go down here through the baseball Big 12 standings here real quick. Oklahoma State leading the conference best, 6-3. They have Texas, West Virginia, TCU, K-State with the same identical Big 12 record at 5-4. KU, 3-3, Tech, 4-5, Oklahoma, 2-4, and Baylor, 2-7. And, of course, Iowa State apparently does not have a baseball team. Oklahoma State, 22-8, 21-9 is Texas. That's what K-State's facing this weekend. They have West Virginia, 22-7, TCU, 18-11, and K-State baseball, led by, of course, manager Pete Hughes, 19-12. So,
quick note, Eddie, too, if you notice, you didn't mention this Baylor. They're 2-7 in Big 12 play. They're 2-1 against K-State. They're 0-6 against the rest of Big 12 play. That is why that series kills you. I'm just afraid that they're going to go back and look at that Baylor series and just think what could have been.
So we'll see what happens when K-State gets their series started with Texas starting tomorrow instead of tonight, as we're sitting and recording this podcast on Thursday, April 6th, 2023. This is the Purple Project Podcast, weekly episode 153. Eddie Greer, your host, Alex Aiden Coles, and of course, Keithan Valentine, former running back on the podcast. I'm going to bring Keithan back in. Get his thoughts on men's basketball. Of course, the Elite Eight run ended, of course, for K-State and Jerome Tang. What were your thoughts on the entire Jerome Tang's first season with the Cats?
Man, it was pretty fun, man. Me and my family followed it. The most impressive thing that I took from him was, first of all, his faith, and second of all, the way he led us. He instilled like confidence in his players, and he let them play like they who they were. You know what I'm saying? Like, he gave them boundaries. we let them be whoever they were. And, you know, and that's kind of tough because, you know, a kid, all the difference between a kid being a good player and a star player most of the time is just confidence and the coach giving him a green light without a short leash, man. And you could see it out there, notably with Noel, but with most of those guys, man, they just play loose and fun. And I think it helped them get all the way to where I don't think people thought they would make it to.
Yeah.
You know, Eddie,
go ahead.
I just want to piggyback off of what Keith has said about the leadership of Jerome Tang. And, you know, Keith, that's not necessarily a lot of coaches, right, are, you know, it's my way or the highway, right? You know, we're going to do it this way, and, you know, you're going to play in my system or you're not going to be here. And we see it so often. And ironically enough, this is just kind of how it's connecting in my brain, because I'm at work right now doing a course that they're sending me to on coaching, using coaching as a leadership tool now that I'm, you know, being put in some more managerial opportunities. And one of the things it's teaching you is that you don't tell your, you know, those who report to you, you know, you don't tell them what to do. You know, you let them figure out their craft. You let them figure out how they want to do it, their style, and then you really provide that support to them, and then they've got more self-confidence, and then you get a better version of them. So I think that what Jerome Tang did really allowed K-State to get the best version of Marquise Noel, get the best version of Keontae Johnson, get the best version of Ish Massoud, which we saw down the stretch hitting those huge threes, and was just integral in that Elite Eight run. So I think that was a really good point, because so many coaches would not have given them the reins, and if they don't have those reins, they don't make that run.
No, they do not. No, they do not, especially. Yeah, I like the leadership part of it as well. Jerome Tang making his faith known. I really love his leadership of this team and the coaching staff as well. Especially, you know, you didn't know what to expect after K-State lost to TCU in the Big 12 tournament there in the first round. Whether or not, you know, you knew there are two things that were going to happen. Were they going to go out in the first round of the NCAA tournament, or were they going to make a run? And they made a run, a heck of a run, all the way to Elite Eight. Marquise Noel, his game really elevated to a new level, in my opinion. So you had Keontae, Desi Stills. I'm going to miss those guys. And obviously, Ish, going to the transfer portal, that was surprising for me. Another podcast I listened to this week, somebody said that there might be one more on the horizon as far as transfer portal goes. And there's already a couple of names in that transfer portal that are really intriguing already.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding? There's a ton of names that I think are really intriguing. You look at you know, LJ Cryer there at Baylor. You look at the Oral Roberts guard. You got a handful of big men that are intriguing. And then I think that there's a handful of players that are not in the portal yet that K-State will probably pursue, because as Jerome Tang mentioned in his press conference, and he also mentioned it last year, a lot of times the players that enter the portal early are players that the coaches kind of encourage to enter the portal. And then a lot of the players that enter the portal later are players that actually want to leave, that the coaches don't want to leave, which a lot of times that second wave is the stronger wave, the better wave. And that's why you want to be patient, make sure you're getting the right guys in your program. So, you know, I know K-State's, you know, we've seen the tweets from the college basketball reporters about, you know, schools have reached out to certain players, and K-State's obviously doing their due diligence with a lot of players right now, and a lot of great fits. Or there's a lot of players that would be great fits, I should say. But it will be interesting to see how this process kind of goes about, because right now they have three open spots, and if somebody, you know, if somebody else transfers out, you know, it's a possibility you can potentially have four, which, again, you know, I think the K-State could recruit at a high enough level in the transfer portal that's not a bad thing if that does happen. We'll just see. But I do want to ask Keith, because I was listening to Jerome Tang's press conference and about Ish, and he was asked about Ish, and he said, you know, look, Ish wanted this, and we told him we could provide that, and, you know, or he wanted X, we told him we could provide Y. It didn't align, and so, you know, we just said, you know, it's best for, you know, it was just best for Ish to go out and test, you know, to test the waters if that's what Ish wanted, playing 25, 30 minutes. And he said that, you know, we love Ish, but for Ish playing 25 to 30 minutes and us winning the game, like, that just doesn't align. And he said, with that said, though, I told Ish, asked, you know, if I don't get the interest that I want, like, could I come back to K-State? And Jerome Tang said, we could absolutely have that discussion again, but just keep in mind that your spot, I might have to give you a call and say, your spot was taken. And he said he understands that. So, Keith, and my question to you, Jerome Tang's very open and honest with his conversations with his players. He's not sugarcoating it. He's not lying to them. He's being straight with them in a respectful way. So, as an athlete, I'm assuming that that's something you would appreciate, correct?
Yeah, easy, man. Like, him, like, because you would think that you would like to keep a guy like that in your back pocket and, hey, tell him, like, oh, yeah, man, we'll promise you this and we'll promise you that, because he'll be a good, you know, he'll be a good guy to come off the bench and do whatever. And Ish wanted, you know, wanted more. And for a coach to be completely honest with you, yeah, that's all you can ask for. You know, you could take it or leave it. You know, you could be mad or you could be glad. But if they tell you the truth, you know what to expect. And for him to be, you know, honest and open with them, I think that's tremendous, man. And that's why those guys play for him. They take constructive criticism. And I think that's why they run through a wall for him. So, yeah, that's important for a coach, man, because, man, coaches are human beings, right? And there's some crazy and good human beings out there. And a lot of coaches can sell you a lie or do, you know, say one thing and do another. So I think that's amazing for a coach to be open like that. And I'm sure there's others, but you could tell that whatever Jerome say, he means it.
Authentic. He's very authentic in his conversation. And sorry, go ahead, Eddie.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
All right, Alex, continue. Finish it before I jump back in.
Oh, no, I was just saying that he's really authentic. I was just saying Jerome Tang is very authentic. And something else that you're looking at when you're looking for a good leader is authenticity. And, you know, sometimes, again, as you mentioned, Keith, and coaches are going to say what the, you know, what the player wants to hear, just keep in their back pocket, because Ish coming off the bench as a sharpshooter for three, I mean, that'd be great for K-State going on a run. But, you know, having a coach that says, like, you know, Ish, I'm gonna be honest with you, this is kind of what your role would be here, and I want you to get the opportunities that you want. You know, I don't want to, especially with this being your last year, I don't want to deprive you from that. And it's bigger than a sports thing. You know, it's not just about sports, it's about being a good person, you know, and giving somebody else the opportunity to succeed. Yes, that will resonate with recruits, hearing stuff like that and knowing that Jerome Tang is, that's real. You know, that's going to be something that, you know, well, I would assume help in recruiting. But I don't think that's why Jerome Tang does it. I think that's how he's wired. I think it's bigger than basketball to him, right? You know. And heck, look no further than after their loss to Florida Atlantic, where he's, you know, clapping in the tunnel and telling them to keep their heads up and to, you know, that, you know, remain positive, and that, you know, we're not frauds, you know, and if we're moping around and, you know, we're moping around and we're feeling bad for ourselves and sad in this situation, then, you know, we're not doing what we've been preaching all year, and we're not frauds, and it's bigger than basketball. This is about, you know, being a grown man. Like, that's what this is about. So that's just unique and authentic, and that authenticity is really important.
Yes, it is. Definitely that truth, that leader that you need, that authenticity that you guys talked about, is definitely something that you look for in a coach. And these guys, depending on how the roster shakes up for next year's basketball season, that's what you need. If you're a current player or you're going to be a player here for Jerome Tang and his men's basketball team. So, but yeah, a terrific ride to the Elite Eight. And once again, upended by a kind of a mid-major, if you want to say, put it that way. But, yeah, big things on the horizon on that end. And, of course, one more other thing before we get into football talk here. And my coworker brought this up to me. It's been kind of been going on, but obviously Naquan Tomlin been getting a lot of looks. So that keep an eye on that. But I hope he comes back. He needs another year of seasoning of growth, because if he comes back, then you're obviously looking at the offense, your draft stock goes higher, possibly in the first round. So, but Naquan Tomlin turned the corner as well during that postseason stretch there.
He absolutely did. He was enormous down the stretch. And K-State just was so different when he was on the court compared to off the court. And when he was on compared to off. I mean, it was just night and day difference. And, you know, one thing we saw a lot from him this year was getting foul trouble early. And a lot of them were silly fouls. And Jerome Tang talked a lot about, you know, we just kind of need to, you know, he started playing basketball so late that we, this offseason, again, you know, if he does not go to the NBA, which he is testing those waters, which Jerome Tang encouraged him to do, which kind of gets back to what we were just talking about. But, you know, if he does come back, assuming he will, because I still think he will, because I think he's got more development and can really raise his draft stock. But he said, you know, we'll work on, you know, he started so late that he didn't really kind of get the base, right, and the foundation that a basketball player gets. And that's one of the big things they would work with him on. And I think that alone could just keep him on the court longer. And if you can keep him on the court longer, that makes you better in and of itself, because he isn't sitting on the bench for 12 minutes of the first half because he got two quick fouls. You know, that's not happening in that scenario. And he's such an impactful player when he's on the court. So if he can do that, and if he can develop like a bit of like a mid-range game, because he's really good at going to the rim, right? And he's a good three-point shooter. He's a good three-point shooter, and I think he'll get better there. If he can develop, like, that mid-range shot, he's got all three levels covered, and good luck. Good luck stopping that.
Yes, good luck stopping that for sure. So we'll keep an eye on what the Tomlin search ends up there, as well as we're only in the beginning of April, so still a lot of off-season left. And, of course, with the transfer portal and all that, we'll see what comes out of the offseason for the men's basketball team and Jerome Tang, and obviously we'll have it all covered on the Pro Project Podcast weekly. Switching gears from basketball back to the gridiron, of course, spring football has been going on, and that's been kind of been put to the back burner due to this run by the men's basketball team there. But now, spring football for defending Big 12 champions K-State Wildcats, of course, head coach Chris Klieman, and there's some question marks with this team. Well, going into the spring, obviously, but going into the upcoming fall season as well, obviously, and obviously, Keithan, we're going to start with the running backs, obviously, and the obvious question here, who's going to replace Deuce? Obviously, there are a lot of options here, but DJ Ginn's obviously comes to mind. You have Trayshawn Ward, a transfer from Florida State. And I'm looking at the 2D right now, getting myself refreshed. I'm seeing some names I haven't even seen yet. But you have a Trey Ingram, a freshman there. You have an incoming class. You have the historic incoming class coming in already. You have Avery Johnson getting some work there. Andre Davis, to name a few. Wesley Fair. Of course, you have Marcus Siegel, who transferred from North Dakota State, who is on the first team, as I'm looking at this depth chart right now. So, kind of, and I'm used to having a spring football game. I'm not used to having none of this all spring football practice and no game, because I think it'll be interesting enough, because we're coming off a Big 12 championship, right? And if you had a spring game, I'm not the coach, but if you had a spring game, you would probably get a lot of folks out here in Manhattan, not just around here in Manhattan, but obviously from all over the state, to come see, get a little taste of what to expect for the upcoming season.
Man, spring game is fun for the fans, but once you get to that last practice, man, you like, you know, it's cool. You get the fans and everybody have fun. That the spring game is really for guys who like you know, really won't get snaps in the fall. They can show what they got upcoming. But, man, you know, guys love ball. But, man, one less, you know, one less practice is easy on the body. But going to the running back, man, I like what K-State has, man. Everybody's like, who's going to replace Deuce? Nobody. Because I thought he was, like, top five in the nation. And, you know, he in the history books for K-State. But, man, I think they have some talent. I always thought that if DJ got confidence in himself and figured the playbook out, I don't know if that took a while, but just having confidence in himself that he was going to figure it out. And you saw some flashes this year, man. And he got some speed. He's big. He reminds me of if you can remember Alex Bournes, but I think he's a little bit more physical than Alex. So, and then if you look at the transfer Ward, I don't think he's a burner, but I think he probably got good 4-5 speed, but man, he reads running back like he's natural. You know, he has short area quickness, he can move. He played with in a deep backfield and played on a high level with a Florida State team that people may think that may be number one next year. So, you know, he could play some ball. I really like his film. And I really like the Joe Jackson.
Joe Jackson.
The freshman. And then another reason why I'm really not worried about the running back, I'm not saying running back is easy, but, man, when you got all those linemen coming back, man, just give me what, you know, get what's there. Give me the 5 yards if it's there. Give me the 10 yards if it's there. And that O-line and the scheme they have, man, it's going to be fine in the backfield.
Well, Eddie, I will give my thoughts on the running backs as well. And I will tell you this. I heard that Keithan has an extra year of eligibility and that he's coming back in 2020. He's got one more year. He can do it. The body can take the punishment. It's only 12 games, Keith. It's only 12 games. It's
not, give him five snaps a game. Five snaps a game.
Yes. Maybe a little just pass protection. Maybe just third down back, right? Third down back. You know, tell him you don't want to play special teams, so you don't have to take the hits. Yeah. But no, look, running back, I agree with Keith 100%. I'm not worried about running back. I really am not. And I think part of the reason why is, number one, you look at K-State's offense, I think it's going to be a little more pass-happy in 2023 with what Colin Klein runs and some of his schemes. Because when Chris Klein first got here with Courtney Messingham, it was more of a run-heavy offense that really relied on running the football, moving the chains, doing those types of things. But now, you've got Colin Klein, who's just an innovator, has tremendous schemes, and he's got his whole offensive line back. He's got Will Howard back, who, I'm sorry, he should be considered the best quarterback in the Big 12 right now. Yes. Because he won the Big 12 last year and was the most efficient quarterback in the Big 12 last year. I don't know why that is getting slept on. So in my book, he's got the best quarterback.
I could go on a rant on that.
Yeah, it's annoying. I don't understand this whole, like, oh, Tyler Shuck, or, Jalen Daniels. Or, look, Jalen Daniels is a beast. I'm not taking anything away from him. But Will Howard's got the crown right now.
We could have that argument.
Daniels is a beast. I will have the argument with Jalen Daniels, but that's really, like, about it. Like, that's exactly as far as I'll go with that. So, point being is, you've got Will Howard, right, who was so efficient last year, really kind of blossomed. You've got those the full offensive line coming back. You know, Phillip Brooks came back in what I thought was kind of a bit of a surprise move.
And then you've got
Keegan Johnson coming in at receiver from Iowa, and you got some good young receivers as well. And so, point being is, I think that the passing offense is going to be a little more prevalent than we've seen in the past. And so I don't know if they'll, you know, lean on the run game quite as much as they did. With that said, we've seen them in past years with running back groups not as talented as the one coming in. So, you know, let's remember, what was it, year two or year three, where your two best running backs were Harry Trotter and I can't even remember
Jordan Brown.
I can't even remember. No, I think Brown was gone. I think Jordan Brown was gone.
That was the first season. That's the first season I'm thinking about.
The first season you had Brown and Gilbert, which was a nice little duo with Trotter. It was the second year. I can't remember who it was. The point being is that running back group room was not. I guess it actually was Deuce. I guess it was Deuce.
It was Deuce. Yeah, Deuce and Harry Trotter.
Deuce actually that year. So maybe I'm thinking Brown and Gilbert. I mean, that was a fine duo, but I like what they have this year better. So they've got, point being is I like this room. They've had worse rooms.
And yeah, they had Mosey, like from Kansas City to Speed.
That's right. I remember he had a huge touchdown against Oklahoma in OU. Right. Yes, on, I don't know, that's the one play I remember that he had. Right. But I remember him too. But again, you got Ward. He was one of the top transfer running backs in the transfer portal. And Casey's able to stack him up. You know, he was really, he was a good recruit going out of high school. He got a lot of touches at Florida State. I think he would have played significant snaps this year at Florida State as well. And Florida State was, you mentioned, Keithan, they're going to be a top five team, going into the year. And so you're going to have him, and then you pair him with Joe Jackson, who, again, I like Joe Jackson a lot as well. I think that he's a player who could have an immediate impact potentially. You got DJ Giddens coming back. And you've got some additional depth there at running back too. And so, I just think that they've got a nice duo there. And I think between Ward, Giddens, Jackson, you're going to get a combination that works. And I think Ward is a complete deal, complete package. Yeah. I think he's going to really be a difference maker for K-State on the opposite side. And I really think that he's got the potential to be kind of a workhorse. I think he does. Now, how much will they use him like that? I don't know. But I think he's got that potential. So I like the running back group. I do. Again, definitely going to reiterate what Keithan said. You cannot duplicate Deuce. You cannot replicate Deuce. And that's not possible. It's just about, really having the best running back room that you can have and the most diverse running back room that you can have, and then doing it with all five starters on that offensive line coming back, which is huge.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
Yeah, that is a rare in the era of the transfer portal. Is getting all your guys from the starting offensive line back there. And K-State has that luxury, all five back, including Cooper Beebe. And then you have Andrew Lingate, who's a sophomore, who played quite a bit last year as well. So you're six deep. Now, I haven't even mentioned Hadley Pantu, who started a few games for the injured Taylor Portier. Hopefully he can stay healthy. Portier can this upcoming season. But, yeah, K-State... That's all their offensive linemen back. And it seems like they had a lot more weapons. No offense to the Big 12 champion roster, but I'm looking at the 2D. They have a lot more weapons, it seems like, than last year's team. And Colin Klein, Alex, you mentioned, more seasoned. I tell you, they're going to be something to deal with. And I kind of want to look at a different angle from... We talked about Will Howard, 1,000 through over 1,500 yards last year, 15 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, quarterback rating, 82.5, right? Okay, so last year we saw, of course, Adrian Martinez and Will Howard. Martinez got to start, but then he had the injury issues, right? And then Will Howard stepped up, and he all of a sudden blossomed. I'm going to put Will Howard aside for a moment. Now, okay, so you have, obviously... Jake Rubley, be back. And, of course, the highly talented quarterback, Avery Johnson, getting bigger in the weight room and stuff like that. So, I want to talk about Jake Rubley. Take an interesting look for a few minutes, folks. All right, so Jake Rubley, right? Been in the program for a few years now. And what? Okay, so I'm going to present this situation. What if Will Howard, okay, gets hurt, Lord forbid, but say Will Howard gets injured. What can Jake Rubley, and we saw him last year get put in situation. Me and Alex talked about it last year, put in situation, especially TCU. I remember, and just didn't look ready at all. So, what can Jake Rubley can provide? This is like his third year with the program, right? So he has to provide something. He came in here at one point kind of highly talented, if I remember correctly, there as well. So what can he provide if the situation presents itself, if Howard were to go down with an injury? What can he provide with K-State?
Okay, then you want to take that one first, or you want me to take it?
Yeah, whatever, whoever, I'm ready.
Okay, I'll give you my thoughts, and then Keith, you can chime in.
Go ahead.
I'm more comfortable with Jake Rubley going into this upcoming year, personally. I think that, you know, he's got another year under his belt. The moment was too big for him last year. You're right, Eddie, we talked about that, and that's not a knock at Jake Rubley. We know that in high school, you know, he kind of got caught not being able to play that last year because of COVID, and then he goes to K-State late, and then he's in the program late. He's learning everything late. So, like, last year was really, like, his first full legit year getting his feet under them, and then he gets thrown in against, you know, TCU on the road in a top 15 matchup. That was not an easy, not easy circumstances. You know, he definitely looked better when he was put in the game. In the home opener, and late in that game, and had those opportunities, which are probably a little more scripted than the TCU opportunities. But I feel more confident in him. You know, he's again really good talent, four star quarterback. He's got a lot of good intangibles. And last year, again, I don't think that you would have wanted to go to that well. But another full season under his belt in the system, under Colin Klein's tutelage, I think is really going to prepare him. And I think that is who will see if something happens to Will Howard. I don't think that Avery is who they would turn to. I think that they want a redshirt Avery. I really do. And so I think that they would go with Jake Rubley, even if they maybe were, you know, tempted to go with Avery Johnson. I think they want him to get bigger. I think that they want to redshirt him. I just don't think that's what they would do, unless it was maybe like the very beginning of this year or something like that. But I think it's who you see. I do, and I want to say I don't think that means Avery won't play. I think I've told you this before, Eddie. I think Avery does play in a few games. Maybe it is even up to four games, not starting, but in maybe specific looks, specific packages, because he's got such good speed that you may be able to do some things, and you take Colin Klein, give him the option to have a full off season to, you know, draw some stuff up that you could maybe use. So I do think that we'll see Avery, but I don't think it will be in the traditional quarterback sense. And so I think that would be more Jake Rubley, and I am relatively confident in it. Now, I think K-State's a Big 12 contender with Will Howard. If Jake Rubley stepped in and had to be, like, the quarterback for an extended period of time, but I think K-State's a Big 12 contender, no. They would drop down. They would definitely drop down from that tier. But do I think they can still be competitive with Jake Rubley at quarterback? And yes, I do. Again, because you got a good offensive line. You got an offensive coordinator who can scheme some stuff up. You got experience on the offense as well. That's the other thing. I mean, you know, we talked about the experience last year in the offense. You've got experience on offense this year. Again, not just because of the line, but you've got Phillip Brooks' fifth year, sixth year? I don't know. I don't even know what year it is anymore for him, but it's a long time senior. A long time senior out at wide receiver. And then you got Giddens with a year of year of really full season of getting some regular playing time experience as well. And so and then again, Ward, yeah, he's new to the program. He's not new to college football. You know, he's been there. He's done that. So I think that they would be fine there. And I think that, Jake Rubley wouldn't have to try to, you know, be the savior or be the hero. I think that he'd be able to manage the game and that K-State could kind of work around it and still have a pretty efficient offense. So I'm eager to see him and see kind of how that progresses. I know the coaches are pretty happy with how he's doing based on what Colin Klein has said, but you know, the jury's still out. There's still a ton of time, right? It was spring and summer and up to the fall. A lot can change between now and then, but I'm feeling pretty good about Jake Rubley.
So I'm gonna kind of piggyback on a lot of stuff that Alex said, man. I liked him in that first game. He looked more comfortable than Martinez to me. He was dropping back, you know, on his third step. The ball was out. He was aggressive. Yep. He had good accuracy on the ball. Good zip on it, man. I liked the way he looked. And to go back to the TCU game, man. TCU and their pressure packages and their speed, you know, they made it to the playoffs. That's in the middle of the game where, like Alex said, I don't think it was scripted for them because it was just out of the blue, you know. That many
quarterbacks. And K-State was so banged up, too.
Yeah.
K-State did not have their full array of guys.
Exactly. So I think that was a tough spot. But, man, he looked comfortable. And like Alex said, with the O-line, I think he'll be good because, like you said, he didn't play the Kobe year in high school. He came in. That was – like last year, you could say it was pretty much his full college year because he probably was like drinking from a fire hose, you know. And I think it was a lot coming to him, and I think he looked confident, man. If you look at that, you can't take a lot from the highlights, but if you look at him, he's slinging it, he's running, he look confident. I think he'll be all right, man, with that O line, with Klein calling plays, man. I think they could scheme him up. Like Alex, I don't know if they could be a Big 12 contender, but I like them in a fight, in any fight against any team with that scheme and with those players. Unlike when Howard came in those times, man, he didn't really have a OC to call or scheme a good game, game plan for him. But I trust Colin, and I trust I think they're gonna have a lot of weapons this year, man. If one thing that's been apparent, if you look at the roster and the kids they're bringing in, man, they're bringing in kids with NFL traits. I'll say you're gonna start seeing 4.3s, 4.4s, and that's a testament to Coach True. But if you look at the film, you know, big guys, man, we might not be spending the same amount, but we're catching up. With some of these schools in the Big 12, with the athletes and the kind of players they're bringing in, man. So I like Rubley, man. I think he'll be all right. I'll even also go as far as I could see him being a starter if Will goes pro. Now, it's going to be a fight. I think, yeah. It might not be just open shut, but I like him as a starter after Howard leaves. But, yeah, man, I have trust in Rubley, man.
You mentioned something about, you know, we're seeing them go more after players with NFL traits. I noticed that as well. They're going after players that are bigger and faster, and then Coach True is just getting stronger because his strength and conditioning program has been fantastic. But it's not just that, though. They're going after a lot of players that come from professional sports backgrounds. I just noticed that it continues to happen over and over where you got Trey Spivey coming in, who comes from a family with sports background. You know, you had Cade Warner in, who comes from a family with an NFL background. You've got Andre Carter coming in, somebody whose dad played in the NFL. They're going after players with more NFL traits and players who have backgrounds of that. And again, Keith, I don't know how much that translates. You know, having the genes, right, of a professional athlete, or growing up in a house where you're around that all the time, so you know what it's like when you're going to college. I don't know how much that carries over, but I'm sure that there's some carryover.
It make a difference, man. If you could look at somebody who kid played in the pros or played in college, it's the way they compete, the way they look at the game, the way they look at certain things, you know, and it'll be outliers, but it's just a difference. Like they walk different, they look at things different. You know, they started eating fruit smoothies at an early. You know what I'm saying? It's just a whole different. They may stretch more than the next. You know, it makes a big difference. I mean,
yeah, it does, and it seemed like K-State, just looking at the 2-deep again, it seems like they reloaded at some of these positions, especially the offense. We haven't even touched on the defense yet, but I am going to bring back Will Howard in the discussion. Now, obviously, he's been overlooked already with some of these rankings that I've been seeing. Let's just run through, obviously, with the new teams now. Got to include the new teams in here. Cincinnati, BYU, Houston, UCF, right? So, Garrett Green, I'm going to start down at the bottom here. I'm looking at one right now. Garrett Green, West Virginia. Alan Bowman, Oklahoma State. Emory Jones. This is a name I'm familiar with. He's been all over. He's been all over the place. Started at Florida. And he was last at Arizona State. He's now at Cincinnati.
Really?
Yep. Wow. Yep. Donovan Smith. He was at Texas Tech last year. He's at Houston.
He's in Houston now, isn't he? Houston.
Yep, Houston.
Yeah, wow.
Yep, yep. Let's see here. Chandler Morris. We should know that name. TCU. He got jumped by Max Duggan. He started early last year before Max Duggan.
He was
kinda
a starter.
Yeah.
He was a starter for TCU game one.
Did he get hurt?
He got hurt. First game, and Max Duggan came in. And, yeah, he clearly couldn't give that job up after the job Duggan did.
Nope, and he became a Heisman finalist, so nope.
He did. Yeah. He did. I think it worked out for TCU.
Yes, it did for them. It did for them last year. Hunter Deckers, Iowa State. So there's that. You have Keldon Slovis of BYU. So that's that. Blake Shapen is back for Baylor. There, and they have, for UCF, John Reese Plumlee for UCF there as well. That's one of the teams that K-State's playing.
Oh, he scares me. He scares me.
Yeah, I haven't looked at his tape at all yet. So, hearing that from you, that's a little worrisome there. But you have a sleeper team next year that everybody's talking about: Texas Tech, Tyler Schlaw. And I think Alex mentioned you mentioned it.
Why they keep jumping him up? Like, all right, we go next.
They do. They I tell you what, they prop Tyler Schlaw. I tell you how much I hear him in quarterback conversations.
Right.
I just don't understand it. And I think Tech will be good. I think Tech is going to be really good. I think they're going to be a Big 12 contender as well. I just don't understand why he's. He hasn't proved anything.
Yeah, he hasn't proved nothing. He ain't proved nothing.
He hasn't proved anything yet. I don't know.
Okay, so that's so on this list, Tyler Schlaw is fifth. So Will Howard is next at four, and then these three quarterbacks, right? Quinn Ewers, third, Texas.
Oh my goodness!
No, absolutely not. But okay,
they turned to a Bill Snyder team after the they ran the ball 80 times to win game.
They did, and then the one time he threw 50 times against Oklahoma State, he was like 19 for 51 throwing the ball.
They keep running to that Alabama game, but man, it was first game, you know.
Yeah. Now look, he was good against K-State. Okay, he made K-State.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, he was good at K-State. Yeah, I was at the game. Yeah,
K-State looked pretty silly. Yep. In the first half, but then he just dropped off, and there was just nowhere to be seen.
Oh yeah,
he was bad.
He was bad in the second half. Yeah,
so
clearly
he's very up and down.
Yeah, he was. He looked sharp. Yeah, because I was at the game last year. He looked very sharp in the first half. K-State did whatever he wanted to do. But then in the second half,
he didn't look sharp when you got Bijan just shredding you underneath. Exactly. You got to load F8 deep in the box.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But they're not going to have Bijan this year. So
no Bijan. That.
All right, so Quint Ewers ahead of Will Howard. So next one, Dylan Gabriel, Oklahoma, number two.
Yeah.
He could sling it, but still, come on, man.
Gabriel is one that I've consistently seen ahead of him.
Yeah.
I think Howard's better. I think it. Now, Gabriel has proven more than Will Howard. He was at UCF before Oklahoma. He was a good quarterback at UCF, really good. That's why he transferred to Oklahoma. But I thought at Oklahoma he was average. I thought he was average. Last year, that was pretty good. I thought Will Howard was better. I thought Will Howard was better when he played last year than Gabriel. So, I understand it, but I think that's even that. I think is more name sake. Will Howard was a better quarterback when he played last year than Dylan Gabriel.
Even though Dylan Gabriel was out a couple of games, I still think Will Howard is better than Gabriel as well.
I take Will Howard over Gabriel. If they gave me the chance, then Alex, you can have one of these two quarterbacks. Which one do you want? I take Will Howard.
Yeah. And then obviously that leaves Jalen Daniels, number one for KU. So
that's
this,
the one quarterback I would have an argument with.
With their offensive scheme, with his legs and how he's matured, that's the only one I had a conversation about.
Yeah, that's
Jalen Daniels. Yeah. I'll tell you this just as well, quickly. KU's offensive coordinator. I forget his name. I'm blanking on his name, but he knows what he's got. in Jalen Daniels, and he's got a scheme that is just perfectly tailored to what Jalen Daniels does. Yeah. And it's so hard to defend. It's just so hard to remember. Remember when we played KU last year in that last game? I mean, I was scared to death every drive just because of that darn scheme. You know, it was just damn near impossible to defend.
I was hoping he got picked up, man. I was hoping he got picked up so bad.
That would have been fine by me if he would have gotten picked up. That would have been fine by me. But yeah, that will be interesting because KU's got a lot returning on their roster. And I think that KU, kills me to say it, but I think KU's a 7-8-1 team.
Yeah, I really do. Yeah, O-line.
They got better O-line.
Yeah.
Yep, they do. Again, they didn't have a big recruiting class, but they got a lot of guys coming back. They did some work in the portal. And then they're gonna have Daniels back, and let's remember they started 5-0. He gets hurt, and then they lose a handful of games, and comes back late with Bean in there. By the way, Bean did a really nice job when he was in there last year too. I think
he took a step forward. Yeah, yep.
And again, they got a really good scheme, and it's scary. I think KU's question is going to be their defense. I mean, that's going to be their question. I mean, their defense was just awful last year, and is their defense better? That will be the question for them. I think it will be better, but do I still think it'll be a top half Big 12 defense? I don't know.
That's the question. Yep.
They got Sean Snyder though. I mean,
that's what I was going to get to. That was going to get to next. Yeah, Sean Snyder.
I was wondering if that would get brought up.
Keith, thanks, Keithan. Yep, I was going to get that next. Yep.
Before we go to him though, I want to talk about I think what could take Will Howard game to the next level. I don't want him to do it a lot. But when he first got here, man, he could run the rock, you know. I hope he could lose a little bit. Yeah, I don't think like 6 or 7 times, maybe 3 to 4 times, man. I think that could open up some things on offense.
And I'm glad you brought that up because I've heard this on a handful of K-State podcasts. The debates: do you run the quarterback or do you not? Because we've seen so many K-State quarterbacks get hurt from running the ball.
Right.
They're like, is it worth it? And that's a legit question to debate. I'm with you though, Keith, and I think that if you've got a couple design runs a game, then that can keep a defense off their toes just enough to where that opens other stuff up for Will Howard. Not just with the run that he may get, but in the passing game too.
Right.
Yeah.
On to Sean Snyder we go.
Yeah, so real quick here. Yeah, I agree. If you have a couple design runs for Will Howard, I'm okay with that. But you have other backs as well. We talked about already. You have other backs back there that can take care of that load of Will Howard as well. So it'll be pretty interesting. Obviously, we still have quite a ways before the fall season comes upon us there with that. Sean Snyder, yes. Keithan, thank you for bringing that up because that was my next point there. Quickly here before we touch on the defense, So Sean Snyder, he was the special teams coach here for a long time at K-State, of course. Yeah, pretty good. Yep, that's special teams K-State. And now he's over to the enemies, the KU Jayhawks over there. What are your thoughts on that?
If KU offered my kid a scholarship or my wife a job, I would tell them to take it. So as far as a business, I mean, like real life, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If they want to give him a job, you take it. I just, the press conference, it was interesting. Some of the stuff he said, I think. That was a little weird if you guys heard it or not. But, yeah, man, he got to take a job, man. What you think, Alec?
I think it's weird that that an assistant to the head coach has a press conference. That's what I think.
Very weird.
I didn't hear the press conference.
I didn't hear the press conference.
No, there's a press conference for the assistant to the head coach, which just doesn't make any sense. I've never heard of it.
He's making $100,000 a year.
Now I've heard of a press conference for an assistant head coach,
right?
Not the assistant to the head coach. That doesn't make sense. $100,000 a year. Yes, that sounds right. It's
like an analyst role, right?
Yes, it it's a tiny role. It's not a big role at all. And that's what that's like doesn't make any sense.
It's weird.
Which also, I will say, that's what makes this a kind of silly. Just a silly topic because it's not gonna have, you know, I see KU fans saying we've got our secret sauce to figure K-State out. No, you don't. No, you don't. You don't have any secret sauce to figure K-State out with Sean Snyder. And I see some K-State fans thinking, like, take him out of the Ring of Honor. And it's like,
oh, come on.
Everyone, calm down. Calm down, everybody. He's padding
his retirement.
Yeah, look, here's my thoughts on it. Do I think it's a little weird? Yeah. When I saw it at first, did I go, they do a double take? Yeah.
Right.
Did I immediately send it to my parents and say, OMG? Yeah. I did, yes. All those things happened. But with all that said, there's plenty of justifiable reasons why he may have done it. You know, he may have wanted to come closer to home. It may have been his only opportunity. may have been his only opportunity to stay in football.
Right.
You know, there's a handful of different reasons why it could have been. As Keaton said, at the end of the day, a business is a business, and you know, your heart can be one spot, but you know, let's be real. He didn't get forced out of K-State by any stretch of imagination, but
he wasn't
really
retained either.
Yeah, he wasn't retained either. And he didn't really think what they were doing. So look,
right.
once you're out of the building. You know, all bets are off. That's just the way it rolls.
It is.
I mean, if you decide you don't want to retain them, that's part of the what can happen with that. So I get it from Sean Snyder's perspective. I also understand why K-State fans not the extreme cases like take him out of the Ring of Honor, no. But I understand the ones that are upset by it. Or irritated by it because it is not a good look. Look, again, I work in communications and public relations. That is not a PR win for K-State, okay?
Right.
not a PR win for K-State when that news came out. That's a bad look for the university when the person who's your stadium is named after and you have got a statue in front of your stadium and his son who played at your school and coached at your school is now coaching at your arch rival. That's pretty weird. That's pretty weird. That's it's not a very good look. Externally, yeah, super weird. And externally, it looks really weird as well. And then it looks even weirder the next day when Snyder's blocking a bunch of K-State fans on Twitter. Again, I understand
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Hold up. I didn't know that. Timeout.
Yes, he went on a blocking spree the next day.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
He blocked a bunch of fans on Twitter. That went viral enough to where it ended up in some articles that he was going on blocking sprees. And it was pretty much any mention of Sean Snyder in a negative way on Twitter. He blocked him. And so that was a weird look. So it all looks weird. And you know, from the K-State side of things, I understand why K-State fans are frustrated by it. Sean Snyder side of things, I understand why he may just be taking a job, From Bill Snyder's side of things, I understand why he'd be peeved and saying, "Don't you know, look, my son's coming before the university and, you know, get out of here, you know." And so, at the end of the day, I don't think from a football standpoint, I don't think it has any impact on anything. I don't think it changes anything at KU. I don't think it changes anything at K-State. I don't think that's a thing. Here's what I think is actually the thing. The Snyder family and K-State, I'm really curious to see now, you know, if a rift, like if we begin to see a rift with the Snyders and Kansas State University, because clearly, this was something that Bill Snyder did not like. I think that's clear. And Sean Snyder, I'm sure, is aware of this as well. And we already, you know, who knows what he thought already prior. But Bill Snyder, he was at the stadium every game, right? Following this team, you know, before this offseason. Is that still going to be a thing? Is he still, you know...
If he's not there for the first game.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's what I'm curious about. I really am. And then if you do have a grift where, you know, Bill Snyder doesn't want to be as involved with the university or being an ambassador to the university or just starts distancing himself from them, that's another bad look, especially, again, when you've got a stadium named after him and you've got a statue outside your stadium. So that is what I'm more curious about, is whether this is something that's actually going to create a rift between Bill Snyder, the university, and, again, that's less of a football thing, but that's just more of a program thing. And I think we all need to remember, and I'll just end it with this, I think we all need to remember, because I see people getting caught up in the motions, of it all. Bill Snyder is the reason that their football team exists.
Right.
At Kansas State, there would not be a team without him. He was an unbelievable coach. He did an unbelievable job. And you can be upset all you want at Sean Snyder going to KU. And that's fine. That's justified. I don't have a problem with people being upset about that. But there's no room for snide comments about Bill, snide comments about their family.
Right.
Going overboard, crossing lines. I've seen way too much of that. And I get it. People are emotional, but don't forget what he did for the university, and because if it weren't for him, he wouldn't be here to have a football program to talk about right now, and he just wouldn't. And I just hope people don't lose sight of that. And again, 100%, if you want to say, like, you know, talk about being frustrated by it, that's fine. And if Bill Snyder blocks you, okay, you know, whatever. But don't go. I'm watching. I'm gonna probably get my phone number blocked for saying that.
Let me go check and see if I'm blocked.
We're all gonna be blocked after this podcast. I was not blocked as of yesterday. I look. So I haven't said anything. I haven't said one thing. So I should not be blocked until Eddie posts the link to the podcast, and we'll all get blocked. But people can say that and get blocked, whatever. But, like, don't take shots at the family. Don't take shots at Bill Snyder. Don't be doing this stuff, because he's an ambassador for the university. Like, he's one of the faces of the university, literally, figuratively. So I just think people need to remember that and be grateful for what he did, and not just forget it caught in this whole chaotic storm of chaos and whatever it is.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast Weekly with Eddie Greer and Alex Aiden.
Episode 153 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly rolls on as we're recording on this Thursday night. It's approaching 11 p.m. Central Time. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas, host of the Purple Project Podcast, Alex Incos, joined once again by Keelan Valentine, former K-State running back. Yeah, so, man, some of this stuff I had never heard of until you guys chatted up. So very interesting, and definitely going to be, especially when we got to go to Lawrence this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, we do. You're correct.
So, but yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye on that. I'll probably need to keep an eye on on Bill Snyder's Twitter as well. See,
I will die. I will die if all of us are blocked on Twitter after you post this. Like,
I'm gonna catch him in Dallas one day and talk to him.
You know, that would be the worst. Keith, if you got blocked by your former coach on Twitter, that would be a long.
All right, switching gears real quick. So I'm going to start with Keelan here. Me and Alex can get into more of this in the offseason. But quickly here, the defense. They have a few players back, obviously. Daniel Green being back, being one of those. You have Khalid Duke back and a couple of transfers. Javon Banks, the nose tackle, huge get for K-State. Kobe Salvage is still recovering from a ACL. I mentioned Marquis Siegel earlier, North Dakota State transfer there. William Lee getting highly talked about to replace getting talked about as one of the corners as well. Keelan, give me one, and between you and Alex, give me one, just one position for the listeners, for the folks to keep an eye on, or a player to keep an eye on, even up to the fall. I'm pretty sure we'll have you back before this season, but just give me one position or a player that we should keeping an eye on.
You want to go first, Alex, or you want me to go?
Oh, like, yeah, I know mine. I know mine.
I'm steal yours. I bet you I steal yours.
You might steal mine. Mine's a position group. Mine, you know, what did you want? Do you want a group or a player?
Let's just get a player. Player. I want to know your player. Okay. Player.
I'm still giving a nugget on a position group while I get the player.
Okay,
so for my player, gosh dang it. No, you go, Keith. Never mind. I gotta recycle my thoughts again.
Alright, I'm gonna go with I like two, but I'm gonna give one. I'm gonna go with Khalid Duke going back to his natural position, man. I think he's gonna be a terror this season. He know how to rush the passer, man.
Oh, I love that. I love it. I love it. I love it. I'm sorry. I'm going to the position group because I only have one, and I really want to go to this position group. So I'm going. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Eddie. I'm breaking the rules.
You are. I'm going that's the linebacking fine. Go ahead. group.
I'm going the linebacking group because linebacker has been such a weakness for K-State since Chris Klein has gotten here, and we've talked about this, Eddie, before, that K-State has just one position that Chris Klein has struggled to recruit and successfully develop is
linebacker. Yep.
It's been the one area that he just has not quite gotten yet since he's been at K-State. And Joe Klinderman mentioned in his press conference this week, this is by far the best linebacking group that he's had at K-State since he's been here. And
they're loaded.
They are loaded. And this is the first time I can remember them being loaded at linebacker ever under the Chris Klieman era. So I'm really intrigued. And Daniel Green is obviously a huge reason why. You're bracing for his loss. And you're getting guys. You got, Kirksey coming in. You got we mentioned Will Lee as a transfer. And you're getting some guys to try to scheme some different things up. And then you've got some really good recruits coming in as well, linebacker.
Yeah.
So you're trying to scheme up, and then Daniel Green decides to come back on top of what you've done. So all of a sudden it's like, whoa, okay, this is legit. You know, this is a legit position group. So really curious to see how that goes at linebacker. And I'm really happy this ties into linebacker. I'm really happy that they moved Khalid Duke out of linebacker
because I don't think
that he is needed there. I think he is at his best on the line, and I think that that's where he's best utilized. K-State's loaded at linebacker. They don't really need him there. They do need an end with Felix gone, and I just think we saw Khalid play his best ball when he had his hand in the dirt last year, and so get his hand back in the dirt. So I love that.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I like that we're covering all three levels of the defense because y'all left me with the secondary. And
there you go.
I'm gonna break my own rules here. I'm gonna get the secondary, and particularly, I like to see what Jacob Parrish is gonna do in his second. He really came on. When Bowie Doe got hurt in the title game there, he really shined. And we saw him before that, here and there. Particularly, I think it was TCU the first time around, and we've seen him in several other spots in the season as well. But I really like the secondary, Jacob Parrish being one of them. I think he's going to take another step forward. Omar Daniels, and then, of course, I still can't believe, well, I can believe it because Keenan Garber from wide receiver secondary.
That was another one I was debating on mentioning Garber. I was should I, plays like two good halves.
He looked good, too. They said he looked great right now.
I know. And it was just so funny because Keithman was on the podcast this time last year talking about him being his backup player.
I did. I remember that.
Yeah. So him. And
here he is, a breakout player corner.
Yep. Possibly. Who knows? And then you have BJ Payne.
He won the Big 12 game.
Oh, yeah. He was pretty good. Then you look down the line. Of course, you're going to get Kobe Salvage back. At some point, hopefully, I don't know when again, but at some point, hopefully, in the beginning of the year, if not at some point in the first half of the year, maybe. I'm not sure, sir. But Vijay Payne, he got some playing time last year. I expect him to take some more steps forward. But yeah, I'm really digging these transfers here. Siegel and Lee.
Yep.
Woo!
Yes.
I'm excited to see them play.
Joe Klannerman feels the same way as you.
Yeah.
Because he mentioned that secondary in his press conference as well and said, we really lacked depth there last year, and we were playing so depleted by the end of the year, and we're really trying to position ourselves this year where we don't have to do that if we get hit with injuries again. So he feels like they're deeper there.
Yeah.
Or it sounds like he thinks they can be deeper there. I should say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm really excited about what the secondary. Now, obviously, they lost Brents, Josh Chase, and Bowie Doe, but, man, the names I just reeled off here, and I didn't name, I'm not going to name the whole like secondary, but there's some depth there between corner and safety, so I'm excited to see that. And then, real quick, special teams, you have Jack Plummer back. You have the long snapper back as well, Raiden Plattner, and our friend, our good buddy Alex, Chris Tennant is back.
Yeah, this is going to get
shot again. He's back.
I hope he improves this offseason.
That's
incorrect. He doesn't need to improve. He's a good kicker. Good recruit coming out. It was in between the temples. It was in between the temples. It's in the head. If he can get right in the head, he's fine. But I hope that he gets right in between the ears.
Yeah,
he needs to get right now. In the springtime, get himself right. Yeah, right now.
I don't know what they'll do if he's done. Yeah. They don't have someone to kind of
to bail him out.
They go get a transfer, then that you know it's a problem.
If he's gonna transfer, I think that he will be off the roster pretty quickly if that happens.
Yeah, that's why.
So yeah, that would be good.
That's what I think as well. But yeah, Alex, you touched on it. Mental, it's in the head. But you have a few months between now and August to get yourself get your mind right and just go out there and make kicks. that's your
got a bomb the leg.
That's your job, so yeah, he's got to improve. He's got to go out there and just take it right away. If he makes his kicks, then Keeman said they get a transfer. Yeah, I think Chris Tennant might be on his way out. But for right now, we're speaking in right now moments here. Yeah, he's got to step up and take charge of that position. So
I think he'll be all right.
I do think they need a contingency plan, though, in place. And not saying a transfer kicker. Don't get a transfer kicker if you don't need to. I think K-State should have a plan if he starts missing kicks again, though, since it's happened 2 years in a row. So, and you don't want to miss out on the potential of a Big 12 championship because you can't make kicks. I thought that was what was going to happen last year. Unfortunately, that didn't happen because Zintner came in and saved the day.
Yeah, Ty Zintner saved us.
They won it on his leg, right? I mean, they won the title on his leg. I mean, that literally can win or lose you the chance to go play for a Big 12 title or to win a Big 12 title. And K-State, again, I didn't think that they were going to have a team that was going to be competing for a Big 12 title this year. I thought it'd be more of a rebuild year. Well, you know, we were going into the beginning of last year, but the way the roster is shaped out, they do have a contender, in my opinion. So I think they need to have a plan in case, because you can't afford to, you know, lose games because, you know, Kenny goes 1-for-3 and, you know, misses a 35 and a 37 yard field goal.
Yeah.
So the difference
between those two kickers was just mental, man. That was it.
100% because I think Tennant's got the better leg.
Yeah,
he's got the better leg, so we shall see what happens there. I'm going to go around the horn with K-State Athletics real quick here before we wrap up this podcast with one more question, and I'm going to say that as soon as I get this all wrapped up. This is the Purple Project Podcast, episode 153, weekly edition. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, special guest Keelan Valentine on the podcast. Track and field, I completed day one of the Gym Click Invitational. The Decathlon started things off earlier today, so they got that going on this weekend. Women's golf back in action tomorrow for Big 12 match play. They're coming off of an 8th place finish in their recent Invitational there. And, of course, you have the baseball. We touched, me and Alex touched on it before Keelan came on to the pod here tonight. Huge 3-game series. And, oh, by the way, Texas is 21st in the country. That's a 3-game set starting tomorrow, about when this podcast comes out as well. Women's tennis takes on KU. KU is ranked 21st in women's tennis. So, so K-State will have to look to try to upset them somehow. So we'll see what happens there on top of that. So I just wanted to catch on, go around the horn with Athletics a little bit. And then, of course, it came out today as well. I did not touch on this with men's basketball. Villanova will be the Big 12, Big East battle opponent for K-State next year, I think. So I didn't look into that, but I saw that somewhere.
You're correct. December 5th, Eddie. Villanova in Manhattan.
Ooh.
Get your ticket.
So... Villanova, that's a good, very good opponent, and we know how they are in the NCAA tournament, but yeah, Villanova.
Not very often a blue blood comes walking into Manhattan, Kansas for a non-con basketball game. That doesn't happen very often. That's
does not. Rich. It does not. It does not, for sure. Man, that's a lot. We'll talk about that in further length, but that came out today, so I figured I'd mention that here on this podcast. So, a lot going on between baseball and track, men's and women's track and field for K-State Athletics. All right, Keenan and Alex, this is the question we're going to end this podcast on, and I'm going to steal it. Listened to this from another podcast and thought, this is an interesting question, so I'm going to pose this to you, and this is about Deuce Vaughn and Marquise Noel. So, whoever wants to go first, go for it. So, the question is, who would you want to build your team around, this individual? Would it be Deuce or Marquise Noel?
Yeah. Well, Keith, and who would you prefer to go first
to this one? Hey, alright. I'm going to say Deuce, man. Deuce been doing it for 4 years, man. I mean, I'm not saying that Noel was a one-hit wonder or anything, because I think he could do it for 20 years if he had to play college football, but I know Deuce... I think Deuce is almost like a, I don't know. I mean, I think I'd do Deuce. Like I said, longevity, he's been doing it for 4 years, man. Good dude. I felt like he galvanized that team. And, it's so hard because both of them the same thing. But I'm just going to go with Deuce because Deuce is for longer.
So, very vague question.
Right.
Because I would need to know, like, what sport are we talking? Is it basketball? And my NBA team with Marquise compared to an NFL team with Deuce? But I'm gonna keep it vague. I'm gonna say Deuce too, and the reason I'm gonna say Deuce is well, number one, because what you said, Keith, and seeing more for Deuce than I've seen from Marquise. Again, I've seen plenty from Marquise, but he had an average to slightly above average season last year, and then he broke out this year. Deuce broke out from the
moment he stepped on campus. Yep.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yep. And he was just that dude. So he's done it longer. He's shown me more than Marquise has shown me. So that'll give me a little more comfort going Deuce. The other reason, and I don't know why I keep thinking back on this, but the one thing that bugged me about Marquise's game, which was part of who he was. It was why he was so great. Ed already knows where I'm going with this. It was part of the reason he was so great, you know. But golly, he turned the ball over so much. It drove me insane. Like, he'd get done, and it'd be like 6 turnovers in the box score. He could single-handedly lose you a game. We saw it happen in the season. I've never seen Deuce Vaughn do anything to, like, single-handedly lose K-State a football game. Now, football and basketball are completely different. You got 53 players against 5. Like, that's a different, well, not 5, like 22 against 5. That would be the proper way of actually saying it. You got 22 players against 5. So, that's completely different. Obviously, the weight of one basketball player is going to carry more than the weight of one football player. Again, that's different because you got different positions, and that whole spiel can open that thing up. But Deuce is, I can't remember him ever being loosey-goosey with football, having a bunch of fumbles, or leaving points on the field for K-State, like doing that type of thing. Like, he's great without that.
Right.
Marquise is great, but with the greatness sometimes comes that as well. And again, that's not a shot at Marquise at all. Marquise had an unbelievable year. He was the best point guard in the country. He deserved that award. Couldn't be happier. His numbers should be up in the rafters. I'm not hating on him at all. He turned the ball over a lot. That's all I'm saying. It was just part of what came with his game.
Who had the best single season?
Who had the single season? Probably Marquise, because I can't think of one year where Deuce was the best running back.
Best running back, right.
Yeah, I can't think of one, and Marquise was the best point guard this year. So I think you've got to give that to Marquise. But from a single-handed best season. But with that said, though, the part of the reason is because of Bijan, and that's like an anomaly. Like, if Bijan's out of the way, then it may have been Deuce for 2 years, for all we know. That is tough. But I will say single season Marquise, because what he did in the tournament was just so next level, so special.
Yeah.
And you know, he didn't reel off an 87-yard touchdown run in a 25-point loss. You know what I mean? Like, he did it winning and going to the Elite Eight. And so I think that carries some weight too.
Yeah, you guys are going to get a complete sweep. Yeah, I'll go with Deuce as well. But yeah, if you could talk about a single season, yeah, I'm with Alex as well. No, Marquise Noel just absolutely took over. And obviously, Bob Cousy Award winner. Let's not forget, he just won that best point guard in the country.
My goodness, man.
So he really broke out. And he also transferred. So he wasn't here like all 4 years. Either he transferred from like Little Rock, I think.
Oh,
Arkansas.
He did.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Deuce was here like from the get go. So build your team. I will build my team around Deuce. And yeah, Deuce didn't turn the ball over. But yeah, with we saw two different Marquise Noels, in my opinion. With Bruce Weber, he came off the bench. And had a sub with Nigel Pack, right? Nigel Pack, of course, we know where he's at and all that. And this year...
Final four.
Yep, and this year, it's Marquise Noel's team. So that was a whole different 180 from that. So for me, it would have been interesting if Nigel Pack would have stayed and see... I've been thinking about this for a while. You know where I'm going to go with this, Alex.
I have.
You would have had to start them both. I mean, you would have had to start them both. I mean, you wouldn't have a choice. Nigel would have been your shooting guard. You have to be your shooting guard.
Would be too undersized, man.
They're so good. They're such good scorers. You have to find. You have to.
Yeah, you have to. You have to.
I mean, you have to. They're too good.
They would eat Pack up on defense,
though. Boy,
offense, I mean.
Can you imagine if you could make trades in college the way you do in, like, professional sports? If you had, like, Marquise and Nigel, can you imagine the trade you could go get a big man who could get a rebound?
Right. You say that. If they would have had both of them, Tang probably would have went and got a bunch of big men.
That's what I think.
That's true. Yeah, it would have been nice.
Yeah.
That's what I think you would have done, but who knows? I would say this is Marquise, real quick, too. I do think, while we all pick Deuce, there is something to elevating your game on the biggest stage. Like, saying, our season's about to end. here we go. I'm going to go ahead and just drop 25 and 20. Just some insane stat line. You're like, oh, my gosh.
But he was dribbling to the quarterback, though. The running back can't do that. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. That's why it's a little different.
Right.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, yeah, Marquise, yeah, he came off the bench last year. So, and he, this year he started. He had a control of his team. So, yeah, Deuce from day one had an impact on K-State football right from the jump. So, that's, yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely.
You know, look, if they kept Nigel Pack, they might not have gotten Keontae Johnson. That might not have happened. Sorry, I'm still thinking about this theoretical. I don't know if that would have happened. If you don't have Keontae Johnson, is it really worth it? I don't know if it would have fit as well.
No, man, that would have been interesting. I think you get Johnson, you probably don't get Cam.
Maybe you would have got Cam if you kept Nigel, and you still would have gotten Keontae Johnson. Look, if you had Cam, I'll take it a step further.
I'll take it a step further than that. Do you get Desi?
Ooh,
probably not. Yeah. Probably not. Yeah. I don't think you do get Desi. You know, I think it worked out for K-State. I think in the long run, it worked out for them. Nigel would have been amazing to get back. And I was super sad when he left. But clearly, Marquise needed to be your starting point guard. And it would have been small with Nigel at the two. And you end up getting Desi, who was a really good X-factor. And Keontae Johnson was, in my opinion, your best player. I know that Marquise had the amazing time. But, like, if you say, pick one guy to get you a bucket right now, I'm giving the ball to Keontae.
That's how it felt all year long.
And they win.
So losing if
he's not in foul trouble, they go on and play.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah, 100%.
100%. 19 minutes? Get out of here.
Yes. Yeah. Terrible foul.
Don't get me started on that.
Awful.
Oh, my God.
I tried not to go there, but it is.
Yeah, don't get me started on that. Man, yeah, but yeah.
Oh, especially that second foul. He didn't even touch him. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, two of those fouls. He got hit in the face.
How do you get foul? How do you call for a foul and you get hit in the face?
Right.
Oh, man. Wow. Well, what a discussion. We could go on and on, but going to have to kind of end that pit, put a pin on that for right now. So, thought I'd ask you guys that, and good conversation there as well. We're about to approach the end of this episode of Pearl Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 153. And we're also, I better mention this before we go off the air, we're recording this prior to Easter weekend. So, big weekend around the country. So, yeah, Easter weekend, Good Friday's tomorrow, and of course you have Easter on Sunday as well. So, definitely, K-State Nation, enjoy your family time this weekend there as well. All right, final thoughts before we wrap this thing up here on the Pro Project Podcast Weekly tonight. Of course, this episode will go up tomorrow night, I think before the first pitch of the K-State baseball game at Texas. Keaton, I'll start with you. What's your final thoughts are?
Oh, man. K-State in Texas?
Well, just in general, what are your final thoughts about the episode?
I got one for you if you can't think of one, because I got one for you.
Give it to me.
I mentioned this to Eddie at the very beginning of the podcast. 2012, 2013, K-State wins the Big 12 in football. They win the Big 12 in basketball. They're a first-round exit in basketball, and they lose the Fiesta Bowl to Oregon, but they're competing for the national title.
Right.
Take 2012, 2013, and you compare it to this past year. Which one's better?
Ooh.
In football, basketball.
Oh, God. Lee Alex.
I know, man. It's a hard one.
This year.
Okay.
I just think it ended better.
It did end better. It shouldn't have ended
the way it should. The other year, but this year just ended better. It felt better, man, and it gave us momentum. It seemed like the floodgates about to open on the programs now because of what happened. It just felt like it. So I would say this year.
Okay.
What you think?
What you think? Yeah, what you think?
What do I think? Oh, golly. So, all sports 2012, 2013, because the baseball team won the Big 12 title.
Yep.
And they were one game away from the College World Series. So, if we're going all sports, 2012, 2013.
That's for me, yep.
Yeah, if we're going just football, just basketball, I think... I still think it's 2012, 2013. The only reason... I agree with you, Ethan. There's more momentum out of this year than there was 2012, 2013. I do not feel like there was the momentum really carried over from that year the way it could have into the next year. So 100% agree on the momentum part. There's definitely way more momentum now. However, in 2012, 2013... The football team was a legit national championship contender. They were number one in the country in the BCS.
We were better.
I thought they were going to national championship. I thought they were going, I thought it was a done deal. And it put them on such a level. They were never that this year in football. I'm not saying that they can't get back to that, but they weren't quite that. They didn't have a quarterback who was a Heisman finalist and Colin Klein. Like, they didn't have that. And so, and basketball is amazing, and it was great, and they made the Elite Eight run. But there was something special being able to win that Big 12 title for the first time in my lifetime in basketball.
Yeah.
I think it was sweeter the second time they won it because they did it on their home court, and it was also dethroning KU from their, 14-year streak of winning titles. So I think that one was sweeter, but... it was the first time K-State had won a Big 12 title in my lifetime, and that was something that was cool. I will say this, though. If you just went basketball head-to-head, I would have picked this year over 2012. Football, I would have picked 2012 over this year. Yeah. Taking the year as a whole, I give 2012, 2013 the slightest, but I think there's more momentum coming out of this year going into the next year.
That's
my final thought.
That team should have won, yeah.
Oh my gosh! Don't remind me. Oh.
We beat Notre Dame, and we fight against Alabama. That matchup was just bad. Oregon.
It was a horrible matchup, and I was there. I went to Phoenix for the game, for Scottsdale for the game. I knew it before I went in that it was not going to be pretty. I went in there anyway, and it was not. I was trying to take a picture of the opening kickoff. The next thing I know, D'Anthony Thomas is in the end zone.
Touchdown! Yep.
Like, I haven't even put my phone down yet. Like. Taking a picture of the kickoff, and he's already in the end zone, and that was pretty much summed up the game pretty well at one moment. So, but Eddie was there for LaSalle. That didn't end great.
No, it did not. Of course, he had to bring that one up. That didn't end well. Yeah, I would go. Yeah, as a whole, I definitely go with, because it was my senior year at K-State. I would definitely go with the 2012-2013 season. But yeah, Keila, you hit on that. I definitely agree that the momentum's different. Because Chris Klieman, football coach, right? And of course, Tyrone Tang got momentum in basketball now. So the momentum's there for both programs. And compared to back then, there wasn't really much momentum, in my opinion.
Just died out.
Well, I
can tell you how the next basketball season began. Eddie and I were calling the game for the Wildcat 9-9. They lost to Northern Colorado to open the next season, so that's how that happened.
That was a terrible game. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, still remember.
Pretty good. They beat KU. They got a 9 seed in the tournament, and then they lost to Kentucky. So, I mean, they had a fine year, but it was not the same.
Yeah, and I can go on and on. That was just a whole bunch of drama with that team. Can't remember. I definitely remember that.
Of Marcus Foster era.
We go on and on. But
I do have one thing before I go, man. You guys did a great job in college, and I haven't seen nobody good until now. The chick that's up there working at K-State.
Oh, she's doing a great job. Yes.
That's been since you guys.
Jacqueline. Is
that right?
So, Jasmine.
Shout out, Jasmine.
Purple Project Podcast. Yeah. Doing a good job.
She does a great job on the radio. She does a great job with Big 12 Now on ESPN Plus. She'll do some sideline reporting, or, well, now it's baseball. She'll do some dugout reporting, whatever you want to call it, baseball. on the field reporting, but she does a tremendous job. And it met her on the radio. She had a really good point. She's had some really good segments on K-State women's basketball, actually.
Yeah.
And she's had some really good interviews. In fact, I think she just had Dream Dowling on.
Yeah, she had Dream on.
Yep, she had
she
Dream
came,
on.
She came in good years, too, though. So she came with some good things happening. So
She did. She came at the right time.
Yeah.
Was did you name anybody else, Keithan, or was it just Jasmine you wanted to shout out?
I haven't heard anybody else. Apologize.
How dare you, Keithan? How dare you?
I've been thinking about bringing her on the podcast at some point this summer. That's definitely on the she's definitely on the list. That's some possible special guest appearances here. So definitely, she's done a good job, and yes, she had Dream on recently on her show there. So that,
which is former sports alums, we love that. We love that the sports department's thriving at the Wildcat 91.9, carrying on a legacy.
Yep, got to do it. Wow, what an episode, K-State Nation, episode 153 of the Pro Project Podcast Weekly. That's gonna be a wrap for this week. Big thanks to Keithan back on the podcast again for his insight, and I'm pretty sure we'll have you back on when football gets closer.
We gotta get your breakout.
You know what it is. Yeah. You already know what it is. Yep. One of my favorite episodes of the
year.
Poor guy's
gonna have to change position when that pick.
I just hope your breakout player doesn't change position.
Oh man! Wow, Alex. Big thanks to you as always for your insight as well. So looking forward to next week. All right, that's gonna do it for now on the Pro Project Podcast Weekly, episode 153. Again, make sure you check out the rest of our daily episodes, which came out this week. Of course, if you missed out on any of the weekly episodes, make sure you are subscribed to the Pro Project Podcast wherever you get your podcast. And if you're not subscribed, make sure you do that first. And make sure you tell a fellow K-State friend, alum, your roommate about this podcast and continue to get it out there, because the numbers continue to grow consistently. So I have been wowed, especially over the NCAA tournament coverage as well. So that's big thanks to you guys, K-State Nation. Keep on doing it. And we're going to be bringing you special guests all summer long like we did last year. So that's one thing I want to keep going, is bring other like former K-State students or athletes onto this podcast. So to even out the quote-unquote dead zone of the athletic calendar. So when that comes to a close, we'll do that. All right, gentlemen, it's been a good one. K-State Nation, we're out. Keithan, Alex, we'll do this again. Keithan, we'll do this again later on. Alex, we'll do this again next week.
I look forward to it. Happy Easter to both of you, and happy Easter to all our listeners.
And you guys, y'all have a good night.
All right. Happy Easter, y'all. All right, K-State Nation, peace.
Purple Project Podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to y'all on the next episode of the Triple P Podcast. Go Cats!